Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. On the show today, we're going to explore what to expect from the Detroit Auto Show now that it's happening in June instead of in January. Plus, we're going to look at the future of technology in the automotive industry. But first, it's no secret to anyone that the metro area that Detroit has foreclosed on the homes of thousands of residents because of issues like delinquent property taxes. But if you were listening to Michigan Radio over the weekend, you might have heard more about this from Reveal, from the Center for Investigative Reporting. The show spoke with homeowner Cynthia Windham, who lives in Morningside. The tax bill on her Detroit home was more than three times what it should have been based on an inflated market value, plunging her into debt.
When I found this house, you know, I said, oh my God, you know, how could I thought it was a blessing? Turned into a nightmare.
The new investigative report from Reveal, the Detroit News, and PRX discovered that the city collected $600 million more in property taxes than it should have based on overassessed property values. Christine McDonald is an investigative reporter with the Detroit News, and Mark Betancourt is a freelance journalist based in Washington, D.C., and they both worked on this story with the Detroit News, Reveal, and PRX. Mark, Christine, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Christine, foreclosures have been so common, and there are a lot of people around who have a story to tell about taxes going up with property values. How did you first become aware something was going on that market forces couldn't really justify?
Well, I was on the beat back in for a while. So this was back in 2013. We first wrote a series of these stories that highlighting this problem. We've heard it at that time, 7 years ago, believe it or not. You know, we had heard from so many people that they felt their assessments, what the city was valuing their properties at and what their bills were just way out of whack. You know, that was several years after the crash, after the real estate crash, and they just... folks were adamant that this was not the reality, and that so that's the piece we started writing about. That was pre-bankruptcy, where resources were very thin. You know, that department, the assessor's office, had multiple problems. There were audits that talked about missing money, talked about people just not having the resources, not the right qualifications for those positions. And so they didn't have the resources. It comes to find out they had not done what was required, a property by property essentially survey to determine these values in decades. So we wrote those stories, again, pre-bankruptcy. The city or the state who was oversight here, and the county has oversight too, but the state came in and said, hey, city, we're going to take the reins here and require you to do this work. So that's where it kind of started.
Mark, you worked on a segment for Vice News about this early on. How did you get connected with Christine and CIR?
Right. Well, believe it or not, I actually didn't even know what tax foreclosure was starting in 2017. But a friend of mine who had recently moved to the Detroit area posted on Facebook about it. And I started looking into it and pitched this story to Vice News. And I had so much left over that I had learned about the situation after doing those stories that I wanted to do something in a local outlet to try to get more of this stuff out there, and ended up connecting with Christine, and we sort of started working together on these really complex data analyses to try and get to the bottom of quantifying the impact on homeowners of these things that Christine had been reporting on for years.
One of the most interesting things with the story that published last Friday in the Detroit News was learning a little bit more about how you came up with all this data. What do you think was the biggest challenge in trying to get the numbers you needed?
You know, I know Mark has his feelings, but I just want to say that we could go on and on about the challenges. But I mean, I think like when I talked about our coverage in 13, a lot of that was anecdotal. We were highlighting stories of the problem. But we were actually looking at appeals, so we did have some data. Now that I think about it, but we didn't have the hard data that we were able to come up with today, and that was part of the problem. And Mark came up with this idea, and you can talk about it a little bit, Mark.
Yeah, so I had sort of realized that as we were looking at individual properties, I had sort of mentally been thinking, you could just compare the past years to the city's new value after it reappraised the property values across the city in 2017, you know, compare the new value to the old values to see, okay, how bad must the old values have been And I'd been doing that just sort of, you know, anecdotally the same way, one property at a time. And I thought if we could just get all of the property values across all of these years for all the properties in the whole city, we might actually be able to quantify this citywide while at the same time giving people a sense of how individual properties were impacted. So we had to really, just over a period of months, try to make sure that we had usable data from the city in order to do that analysis. And one of the biggest challenges was just that part of the reason why their values were so bad in the past years is their records were so bad in the past years that they weren't even really sure what they had and what they were looking at. So, you know, we had to kind of comb through stuff and just make sure that we had what they call clean data in order to do this analysis in a way that was kind of uniform across the whole city.
I'd like to add that, you know, it's important to give people these larger numbers, you know, the $600 million at least, which is a conservative estimate experts have agreed with us on, that that's important, but we wanted to go that extra mile because those numbers are big and are thrown out a lot in Detroit. And so we are able to give home at least the vast majority of properties, put those out and give an estimate on what those individual properties. So on our website right now, you can search 173,000 properties and get our estimate for how overtaxed the properties were over the span of time, which was 2010 to 16.
What's the relationship between the amount that people were overcharged and the overall debt that they owed?
Yeah.
Christine, do you want to? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Mark, go ahead.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, well, go ahead. That was one of the things that we really wanted to do because a lot of people paid their inflated tax bills, which means there's really nothing they can do to get that money back at this point. But people who still owe tax debt, you know, may not owe as much or may owe nothing in many cases. We actually found tens of thousands of properties, about 40,000 properties, that owe less today than the total amount by which they were overtaxed from 2010 to 2016. And so we thought, you know, going forward, if we just had a way to quantify the relationship between inflated tax bills and the current tax debt for which people might still be feeling consequences, be still trying to pay, and may still lose their houses over that debt, you know, that could be a really useful tool for people to have right now.
One of the things that was so totally heartbreaking about this story, some of these homes had been in people's families for years. Mm-hmm. They were just low valued and passed down through the generations as one of the few assets that families, especially Black families, might have. Others were bought by people who were getting a real shot at home ownership, like mm-hmm. Cynthia Windham, the homeowner that we heard earlier on in the show. I know this is the $64,000 question, but how did this discrepancy in taxation go unaddressed?
Yeah, it's a hard to get your head around. But it was, I think it was the perfect storm of events. You had the housing crash, and that was historic. Those values were so high and then went so low that folks just didn't move soon enough in those departments. They didn't have the resources. Prior to that, we had Mayor Kilpatrick scandal. That was occupied much of our time, the coverage of that trial and scandal. And then we had leadership changes. We had two mayors over that period, Ken Cockrell for a short period, and then Mayor Bing. So there was a lot of leadership. I mean, I went back to the timeline and trying to remind myself, when you cover this stuff, it tends to blend together. But, you know, in 2011, I believe, Mayor Bing was warning we were going to miss payments, and the city was going to run out of money. So all this was happening at the same time. This perfect storm, I think. There are still a lot of questions, there were at the time and now, of why didn't the state or the county, which both have oversight, didn't step in soon enough or sooner. And I did talk to Doug Roberts, who was the chair of the State Tax Commission that has oversight, and he did say that they had a sense that that things were off, but not to the degree until we started writing about it. And he does have regrets and wishes the state would have stepped in sooner.
It might be easy to look at empty blocks in Detroit and think, well, really, you know, how many people were impacted by this? Were you able to get a sense of how many of the properties covered in the data were occupied?
That's a good question. Yeah. Mark, you want to talk a little bit? I mean, we have overall numbers, but it's just so hard to pinpoint the occupied versus unoccupied because it's such a fluid number. I mean, we do know, you know, of the 173,000, the vast majority of that number were were overtaxed. So, and I think it was nearly 96,000 were twice as much as they should have been in those years, in at least one of those years. So we know those big numbers, but yeah, unfortunately, it's hard to say occupied versus non-occupied. But at this time, you know, over that span, that was quite a span. So and also in the data, sorry, Mark, but you can talk a little bit about this too. We wanted it to be really fair, conservative estimate, and we looked at just folks as of 17 that were getting tax bills. So that this is not including folks who, let's say, maybe had been foreclosed prior to 17 and the house was blighted and was bought by the land bank and is not taxable anymore. So we're talking just folks that got tax bills for the most part in 17.
Mark, and anything? Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the advantages to having this parcel level data where you can look at individual properties as well as in the aggregate is that going forward, there is data, the neighbor to neighbor program that the Quicken Community Fund has spearheaded that has really gone out and knocked on doors and found out, you know, how many of these properties are occupied. The county also does a similar process when it notices people for foreclosure, making records of whether or not properties are occupied at that time. That data can now be correlated with the data that we have on individual properties in terms of overtaxation. So going forward, we actually probably could do something like that using all of that data to kind of connect these dots.
Mark Betancourt, a freelance journalist, and Christine McDonald of the Detroit News, they both worked on the story of overcharges in city property taxes. We will have more on this story tomorrow.